it's nice talking to myself.
Welcome back to Heroin, Butt Sex, and Lord of the Rings. You are here on a special Sean and Richie only episode. How are you, Sean?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. This week I saw some live music.
Really? What did you see?
My dad was turning 68.
Oh, right.
We the whole family went to San Diego to see a Grateful Dead cover band.
Cool.
Yeah.
Were they good?
Yeah, they're great.
Did they play Fire on the Mountain?
They did not. It was a very disco set. They did a really long Shakedown Street, but it kind of ruled. Like a lot of their, it was pretty good. I think my parents both ate edibles before the show. They were dancing
a lot.
That's
cool. I've been trying to get high with my dad. It hasn't happened yet, but it'll happen. I mean, we'll do a Grateful Dead song on here, obviously, eventually.
Yeah.
Have you seen the footage of the Altamont documentary when the Grateful Dead show up at Altamont and are told that someone has died? Have you seen that footage?
I don't remember that now.
It's Jerry Garcia. He gets out of a helicopter and he's like, oh man, bummer, dude. And then he just gets back on the helicopter. And they didn't play.
Yeah.
They were scheduled to play and they were like, oh, that's a bummer. All right, bye guys. We can't be involved with these vibes. We can't save the day and turn this around.
Like I got way too much weed on me right now. This place is crawling with cops, like
cops and bikers, and security and stuff. He was just like, "Cool, that doesn't sound that cool." All right, we're gonna take off. Have a good time,
peace, guys.
Smart man. First of all, on this show, of course, we take it as a given that every song ever written is about one of three things: heroin, butt sex, or Lord of the Rings. The question that we're debating here with just me and Sean today is which of those things the following two songs are about that we're going to tackle today. The first of these songs is Sweating Bullets by Megadeth, 1993. The second song we're going to tackle is Groove is in the Heart, 1990. But before we get to that, we're going to follow up on the last episode song, the Billy Idol song that we tackled in the last episode that I was unable to really figure out for myself. Sean and Brad both came down on the butt sex side with that song. I have since revisited the research and I have a new argument to make. If I may.
Yeah, please, please.
I think that Brad was correct at the beginning. Brad came in and said that this seemed like a heroin song and that it was one of the classic models that we have seen where heroin is sort of the lover in the song. Uh-huh. I think the idea was that he was doing other drugs to avoid doing heroin. So I did some more research, and I think that this song is written about his then-girlfriend, Perry Lister. That's the sort of like person that he doesn't want to call him on the phone when he's far from home.
Right, right.
It's this woman, Perry Lister, and he was out there cheating on her, and she was out there cheating on him at the time, leading up to the release of this album. And then I found this quote, and I was like, oh my God. So here's the interview quote that I found from Billy Idol that pretty much, I think, seals the deal on that song. He says, here's the question. Apparently, you once described Whiplash Smile, the following album, as one of the most soulless pieces of shit I think anyone could make. What made you say that? And here's his answer. I don't think that at all. I don't know why I would have said that. I was very drug addicted at the time. I was trying to get off heroin by ending up taking tons of blow. By blow, you mean cocaine? Yes, I ended up smoking it, but I did get off heroin for a while by doing that.
I mean, I'm glad it. I guess it worked a little bit, or for a while.
Yeah, I think that's probably what they were both doing. That's why he's imagining her out there, also sort of keeping the pact to not do heroin out there. Like it's such a terrible strong drug or whatever that to avoid it, the healthy activity that you're doing is stealing cars and doing tons of blow in Vegas.
Well, also just biographically too, it does make sense that that's how you would end up doing like a 36-hour video shoot in the desert and not take your contacts out until you'd made a plane ride to a separate city.
Yeah. You just forget. And you're like, no, it's fine. I just wear contacts forever now. That makes me look like a demon.
No, right, they've melted to my eyes. They've melted to my eyes now.
So, I mean, I think that given that quote about that period of his life where he's actually saying that he was doing tons of uppers to avoid doing heroin, I think it's pretty open and shut. But
I still don't really know what eyes without a face are, though.
That's good point,
kind of
Sean.
The missing thing for me. I do agree that that's strong biographical evidence, and it'll make me look at the Billy Idol song catalog a lot closer.
So it sounds like where we're going to leave this off, because we have to get to this week's songs, is that I'm now firmly on heroin, and Sean's back up in the air.
Right. I got to look at the lyrics again and see how committed to the butt sex theory I am.
You really are. Right. Yeah. Okay.
I'm kind of wondering what he was on at that white wedding, you know?
White is a daring color to wear if you're going to do a lot of butt sex.
I did hear Billy Idol on a radio show, and he was talking about how he thought that one of the most perfect albums he'd ever heard was the first Tears for Fears record. I just wouldn't have thought that Billy Idol would call that one his favorite.
Huh. Yeah, I wouldn't think so either. I thought it would be more heavy rock and roll stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that was.
But I mean, I can't. That's good taste.
Good album, but yeah.
And then our first new song for the week is going to be "Sweating Bullets," written by Dave Mustaine, 1993. Here are the lyrics, so we can get right into it. Hello, me. Meet the real me and my misfits way of life. A dark black past is my most valued possession. Hindsight is always 20/20, but looking back, it's still a bit fuzzy. Speak of mutually assured destruction. Nice story. Tell it to Reader's Digest. Feeling paranoid, true enemy or false friend. Anxiety is attacking me in my air or hair. We're not quite sure. What do you think? Air or hair?
I think it's hair, but
I think he doesn't touch his hair in the video, though.
Oh, okay.
I looked through the video to be like, does he motion to his hair?
Yeah, yeah.
He doesn't. Anyway, anxiety is attacking me and my hair is, or air, we're not sure, is getting thin. I'm in trouble for the things I haven't got to yet. I'm chomping at the bit and my palms are getting wet, sweating bullets. Hello me, it's me again. You can subdue but never tame me. It gives me a migraine headache sinking down to your level. Yeah, just keep thinking it's my fault and stay an inch or two out of kicking distance. Mankind has got to know his limitations. Feeling claustrophobic, like the walls are closing in. Blood stains on my hands, and I don't know where I've been. I'm in trouble for the things I haven't got to yet. I'm sharpening the axe, and my palms are getting wet. Sweating bullets. Well, me, it's nice talking to myself. A credit to dementia. Someday you, too, will know my pain and smile its black-toothed grin. If the war inside my head won't take a day off, I'll be dead. My icy fingers claw your back. Here I come again. Once you've committed me, now you've acquitted me. Claiming validity for your stupidity. I'm chomping at the bit. I'm sharpening the axe. Here I come again. Whoa. Sweating Bullets. Those are lyrics to Sweating Bullets, 1993 by Dave Mustaine.
Yeah.
I do have an opinion. I think it's a Lord of the Rings song, but
I also think so. The main thing, I'm pretty sure it's not a butt sex song.
Me too. Even though the video at least features, which is a groundbreaking CGI video.
Yeah, it is bonkers for 1993 for sure.
For sure, it was way ahead of the game. There's like a million Dave Mustaines in prison together, beating up on each other. And yelling at each other. It's sort of, in a way, meant to represent the inside of his mind. Is this prison, you know, that he's trapped in with himself? You know, anytime you have just men alone in prison, there you are.
Right, 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 yeah.
You got butt sex there, kind of.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the prime butt sex locations.
You know? Absolutely. But I agree with you. I don't think it's about, because there's nothing. There's nothing erotic going on in there. They're just beating each other up, and it's just more like murder and stuff.
Right, right, right. Know. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I would really recommend to our listeners to check out that video, though.
bizarrely genius song and video. We're not seeing much. It's just a lack of butt sex stuff. It's not like it's not about butt sex. It's just there's no proof that it would be. Why would it be?
Right. And yeah. I wouldn't have thought so without the video either.
Yeah, just the lyrics by themselves. I mean, it would have to be like he's fighting with something inside of himself, so it would be like a closeted or someone who has butt sex related feelings but can't bring themselves to act on it and
yeah.
fighting themselves, but I don't really see that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then as far as heroin, Dave Mustaine did a shit ton of heroin, and he went completely sober 2 years before this album came out.
Oh, okay.
And this was his biggest hit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he got kicked out of Metallica in 83. This came out in 93. So he spent that entire decade loaded out of his brains Damn. On cocaine, heroin, and booze.
Yeah.
And everything else. And then reached his highest, hit once he quit. And I think that you could make a case that this is about that. It's sort of the other Dave.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And like the mutually assured destruction.
He got kicked out of Metallica in particular because he got violent when he was high and drunk.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So he was fighting with James, was fighting with, what's the other guy's name?
Kirk.
He was fighting with James and Kirk. No, not Kirk.
Oh, Lars.
He was fighting with James and Lars. And they just had to kick him out because he was too much trouble. Because apparently, back in the day, Metallica was like fun time boys. I think of them as like at least James Hetfield.
Like real serious guys.
Real serious.
Although I guess if you see the Some Kind of Monster documentary, James Hetfield spends a lot of time driving in tiny cars.
Oh, okay.
That he like restores himself. So I get it. You know,
that they were fun. They
wanted
to have
Hawaiian birthday party, I think, for Kirk or something like that. And
Dave was like really sort of a dark person that they
right
that would get violent and fight and just be mean and horrible and stuff. And Dave admits that he's like, yeah, I would have kicked me out too. I was a monster at the time. But that's on everything, not just about heroin, you know?
Yeah.
It's like the drinking, the drugs, the violent behavior, everything.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. There seems to be a lot of guilt or like
self-loathing. Yeah. And
which I think leads us squarely
to
one place as far as I can see. I'm interested to see whether you came down in the same place.
Yeah. You Gollum, right? Were you right. going Gollum? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's enough of just the dual personality thing. And then also, I swear to God, you listen to this song with these lyrics. I think there's an argument that Andy Serkis may have been a little influenced by this when he was deciding his voice for this.
Yeah. This is like a loop. It's Dave Mustaine. First, J.R.R. Tolkien wrote the book or whatever. Then Dave Mustaine read the book. Dave Mustaine identified so much with Gollum and what's Gollum's original name?
Smeagol.
Gollum and Smeagol, that he wrote this song from that perspective. Andy Serkis, then you're saying,
here's him going, hello me, meet the real me, and thinks like, oh, I can use that. Like he's a little smaller than Dave Mustaine, so you gotta just make the voice a little. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. And I think, yeah, this song is essentially exactly just Smeagol talking to himself.
Yeah.
And the two different versions of Smeagol, the more violent of which thinks it's smarter than the peaceful one.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's what's going on here in the song. He's saying, you know, at the very end he says, someday you two will know my pain and smile its black tooth grin. That's the selfish, violent version of himself telling the more trusting, logical version of himself that he's wrong.
Yeah.
And that he'll pay for his weakness.
Right. Yeah. This is unavoidable. And it's like you're guilty. There's blood on your hands. But actually, worse things are about to happen.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, basically saying like, well, he says, once you've committed me, then you've acquitted me, claiming validity for your stupidity. He's saying like, go ahead and try to be nice and peaceful and think things through. If you want, it's not going to work. You're going to end up right here in this violent space where it's the law of the jungle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One way or another. So quit trying.
And he, you know, and Gollum actually kind of was committed and then acquitted. He was taken into prison and then got released.
And I will also say that Dave Mustaine, I read a quote where he was talking about how he very intentionally writes songs for young men between the ages of, you know, 11 and 18.
Yeah.
Like, that's his audience.
Uh-huh.
And he said, like, you know, I think, and he was talking about, like, another song, like, Symphony of Destruction. And he was saying, like, this is what young teenage kids like. They like skulls. They like destruction. They like blood. That's why I write that stuff. And his whole catalog is, it's really like, yeah, it's like a fourth grader's like sketchbook full of like, you know.
And then he blew up and he's dripping blood.
And all these missiles came down.
Yeah.
Exploded, dude. Like, that's, I don't know to what extent Dave Mustaine is capable of anything beyond that. But
right.
He, at the very least, has very intentionally written in that oeuvre.
Right, right, right. Yeah, yeah.
In that space.
That's his, that, yeah, that's where he,
yeah,
he's comfortable.
Which is, newsflash, that's exactly who reads Lord of the Rings is.
Oh, yeah.
You know, young.
That's where you get hooked.
Yeah. So, so casting into Lord of the Rings and finding, like a way to make it like, instead of, Gollum, it's me, Dave Mustaine. It's not surprising at all.
Oh yeah, and just that setup of everything as true enemy or false friend, like, yeah, okay, that's,
yeah. So at that point, especially, you know, in like the, well, in the films they do, you know, Gollum looking into a placid pond and arguing with himself with the evil version of himself, and he has enemies and friends in the mirror, and he has enemies and friends sleeping in sleeping bags next to him, and he can't make up his mind.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Whether to trust the hobbits or whether to destroy the hobbits or whether to... Uh-huh.
Yeah, and the best case scenario is still false friend.
False friend, because he's in that relationship, he has to be their friend, but he knows that they're not his friend.
Right, right,
exactly. Or at least that Samwise is not his
friend. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But where Frodo might be his friend, he's also willing to kill him if he has to.
Yeah, right. So, yeah.
It's not the kind of friend you really want. We'd be like, hey, buddy, you're my best friend. Also, don't test me, because if you do, I will kill you.
Yeah. Like,
that's not the kind of friendship you really want to have, and that's the best that Gollum could do at that point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because he was that untrustworthy. And I think that that's a perfect metaphor for Dave's situation, because, like he said, they were right to fire him from Metallica.
Oh, right, right, right.
And so he is this character who should not be trusted. And he had to start all over by himself. And he did it. He, you know, he already won a, you know, by now he won a Grammy. He's, you know, sold a ton of records. He just beat cancer.
Oh, yeah.
This year. and he's sober and he's alive and doing well. But he had to go through that period of being the very monster he's describing in this song.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And I really think, like, the chomping at the bit, there's enough teeth things there almost for Dave Mustaine to be like, remember this guy? He's gonna bite off someone's finger. He's like, literally, he's chomping.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Gollum bite. Whose finger does Gollum bite off?
Frodo's.
Frodo's finger.
Yeah.
Right, to get the ring.
Yeah.
Yeah. In this video, he's extremely violent,
mm-hmm.
but to himself.
Right.
And he's sort of beating himself up for having been violent.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, you can't control yourself. And then just punch, punch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, he was an angry young man. And by this time, he had become a angry, much more mature artist.
Yeah.
You know? So good job, Dave. And good job sneaking in this very obvious Lord of the Rings structure without anybody really talking about it.
Yeah.
Or noticing it at the time. It's actually interesting because we've never had, it seems like there would be a song about Gollum out there.
Right, we kind of haven't.
Yeah. But it really is. It's so parallel to that, the scenes of Gollum talking to himself, you know?
Yeah,
and totally. It's probably, especially for someone like I was saying, since he's writing for a teenage audience, this is the best, most vivid, and most readily available example of this sort of talking to oneself schizophrenic break idea, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So we are saying that Sweating Bullets by Megadeth is about Lord of the Rings. In particular, it's Gollum talking to himself is the inspiration for this song. I have really no doubt about that.
Nah, no, absolutely. I'm going to look at Megadeth in a little bit of a different way, though, now.
Yeah, but it's really, I'm not surprised to hear that a popular metal song is derived from something that, you know, was really well done inside of Tolkien's world. You know?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the imagery is not unique to one or the other either. Like,
yeah.
A ghost is riding a horse? A man who's mostly skull is talking to somebody?
Yeah.
Like,
welcome to heavy metal.
Yeah, heavy metal is like being a little bit embarrassed about being pretty into elves. Numenoreans had like pretty sick long hair. Black coats, tight. Aragorn was like almost in the trench coat mafia.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, half if you just you know, like if you did like LOTR extra or Norwegian metal band, like you'd be like, there's a lot of crossover. Yeah, if the person's just like standing outside drinking a coffee, you'd be like, hold on, is this on the set of Lord of the Rings or is this an outdoor festival in Amsterdam?
Yeah, right.
Watch out.
All right, our second song of the day is Groove is in the Heart, written by Dimitri Brill, Chung Dong Hua, Kieran Kirby, Herbie Hancock, and Jonathan Davis. This is by the band D-Light. It's from 1990. The sample, the bass line of the song is taken from a Herbie Hancock composition that he wrote for Michael Antonioni's Blow Up. From 66, I think, or 68, 66, I think.
Yeah, it's classic new wave cinema.
Yeah, and this, you know, Italian director takes a super hip American jazz composer, producer, and has him do the soundtrack. This whole thing is just dope, obviously.
Yeah.
It's like incredible. And Dimitri and Toa Tay, which is Chung Dong Hua. You know, I don't know which one who found this and decided to use it, yeah. But very smart move. Great.
It has a lot of crazy samples. Like the song samples Green Acres and a Herbie Hancock song from the 60s.
Green Acres, the TV show?
Yeah.
That's great. Is that the beginning where it's like, we're going to dance?
I part.
Oh, cool.
And that's actually Eva Gabor.
Yeah. And then there's a ton of samples in here and I don't know where they all come from, but this was there's actually a great, I'll just play this real fast early on since it doesn't figure into any of the arguments, but here's Lady Kier, who is not dead. We'll get to that. here's her talking on a interview show, the year this came out, talking about here. She's addressing sampling culture and like how it's looked down on and that how that needs to stop. Like she's saying like, this is music. Like we're making legitimate music. Don't call us whack for sampling stuff. So here's what she says about it.
You know, it's about time to show people this is music. It has to be respected just like every other kind of music.
It's time to jump over the wall and enter the holographic mind orgy.
Time to jump over the wall and enter the holographic
mind orgy.
Okay, so this song, this is actually a tougher song for me. I don't know where you are with this one. Here are the lyrics to Grooves in the Heart, written by Dimitri Brill, Chung Dong Hua, Kieran Kirby, Herbie Hancock, and Jonathan Davis. Dig. The chills that you spill up my back keep me filled with satisfaction when we're done, satisfaction of what's to come. I couldn't ask for another. No, I couldn't ask for another. Your groove I do deeply dig. No walls, only the bridge. My supper dish, my succotash wish. I couldn't ask for another. No, I couldn't ask for another. Groove is in the heart. Groove is in the heart. Watch out. The depth of the hula groove move us to the nth hoop. We're going through to Horton. Here's a who. I couldn't ask for another. DJ Soul was on a roll. I've been told he can't be sold. Not vicious or malicious, just lovely and delicious. I couldn't ask for another. And then here comes Q-Tip. Someone's in this torso, hot. Got a deal you want to know. Delightful, truly delightful. Making it, doing it, especially at a show. Feeling kind of high like a Hendrix haze. Music makes motion, moves like a maze. All inside of me, heart especially. Help of the rhythm where I want to be. Flowing, glowing, with electric eyes. You dip to the dive, baby, you'll realize. Baby, you'll see the funky side of me. Baby, you'll see that rhythm is the key. Get ready with it. Can't, quit it. Stomp on the street where I hear a funk beat. Playing Pied Piper, follow what's true. Baby, just sing about the groove. Groove is in the heart. Those are lyrics to Groove is in the Heart, 1990. Because it's about heroin or butt sex or Lord of the Rings or some combination of the three. I'm sure of that, but it's a little bit tougher to discern this one.
Yeah, should I just give my take, you think?
Yeah, sure.
I was pretty inclined to go with butt sex on this one. It's very sex positive.
Yes.
It's very open-minded, but also has elements of... a lot of it is about sexual boundaries, I would say.
Okay. You know? Briefly, I think that the standard interpretation of this is she's just appreciating her lover. She's saying, like, I love you. Thank you so much for being my lover. I love you. You're so sexy. Let's explore the world and experience good vibes together kind of thing.
I do think that the second verse is very butt-oriented, though. I would say.
Are you talking about?
Okay. Only the bridge, my supper dish, my succotash wish. That to me seems like she's talking about a little bit of salad tossing, basically. No walls, so this is not, no vaginal walls.
This is only the toughest bridge. Verse. Yeah.
This is the little, you know, the little taint, the gooch, whatever you would call it, my supper dish. And the fact that she says my succotash wish, succotash, I was not familiar with. I more knew it as something that Sylvester the Cat said.
He said
in Looney Tunes,
suffering
succotash. Yeah. But this is a dish with corn and beans. And I just feel like
it's got a lot of fiber.
Yeah, and like kind of talking about cornholing a little bit.
So okay, just for background here. The term succotash is originally a Native American dish of beans and corn, and whatever it's sort of like also whatever you've got.
Throw it in the pot. Exactly.
The original word is msikwatash. But it turned into, when Sylvester says it in Looney Tunes, it's suffering succotash. So succotash in America became sort of a nonsense word that you could substitute for other things. So that term suffering succotash would have originally been suffering savior, but succotash is replaced the same way like bagosh or...
It's like a euphemism, so you're not being...
You're not using the Lord's name, right?
Okay, so this would be my savior wish, you think, here?
Well, see, but this is different. This is a different use of it, because as far as I can determine, succotash in this sense means poverty food. This would be the equivalent of saying like, ramen noodle wish, meaning like a wish for something opulent when you're actually in poverty. A lofty dream cast by someone who has no hope of achieving it. But she's saying that her lover is that unattainable thing that
succotash wish, yeah,
that she somehow obtained. Yeah,
yeah, man. I wonder if that phrase succotash wish is like anywhere else.
It was used later in a Alien Ant Farm song.
They say succotash wish, but it's like the D-Led songs out there.
Exactly.
That's interesting. Yeah. And I think you can kind of interpret the I couldn't ask for another part two ways. Uh-huh. Because the sort of surface one is like, I'm completely fulfilled. Like, why would I want another lover? But also, I kind of think there's an element of like, this is a groove. This is a holographic orgy.
Uh-huh.
I'm actually just saying, like, look, no judgment, but right now I'm just down with just you. Your friend's mm-hmm. not, like, I'm not going to ask for another. I'm not going to ask for a double penetration.
He's not invited.
Yeah, he's not invited here.
Well, he's never in any of the interviews.
No.
Because Dimitri and Lady Kier were a couple at the time.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. Yeah. Okay. And then, so the part that I thought was kind of confusing and I had to research it
mm-hmm.
is, so she says, move us to the nth hoop. We're going through to Horton Hears a Who. So Horton Hears a Who is about
yeah.
an elephant. It's Horton's second starring appearance in a Seuss book.
And in which he's protecting a vulnerable creature.
Yeah, like a tiny universe. And the first one, he's sitting on an egg.
Right.
And it's all about how an elephant's faithful. This one is about the dignity of all creatures, no matter what sign there are. But also, mm-hmm. this is kind of about a safe word, I think. He's hearing a tiny cry, and it's like, this is responsible sexual behavior we're talking about now. It's probably drugged out. It's probably a little wild, but that's how I interpreted the Horton Hears a Who part.
Okay, I can see that, because in Horton Hears a Who, the smallest inhabitant of Whoville is taken to the top of the tower to yell so that the other mean creatures of the jungle don't destroy their civilization. And Horton is saying, like, no, listen very closely.
Uh-huh.
Pay attention. Yeah. But there's also a way to interpret I couldn't ask for another as being like the way somebody, if you are going to give them a second piece of pie.
Oh, and they're like, oh, I couldn't ask for another, but...
But I will.
You know, if, I mean, Q-tip's already here.
Yeah, I kind of think it's a little demure like that. It's
yeah.
like, no, I mean, I shouldn't.
Yeah.
And then the person who says, no, I shouldn't,
yeah.
inevitably does. And
yeah.
I think there's a, you could look at it that way too, where she's
oh,
like,
I think, yeah, you know. Yeah, yeah.
She's but game.
But I just think it's a very nice early in the 90s commitment to like sexual communication
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
you know, knowing the limits. But yeah, and then once I say someone's in this torso, it's like, oh, okay, I see. We're not even
yeah,
messing because, around now, Q-tip.
Right, because that term, someone's in this torso, there's only two ways to interpret that. Yeah. One is a soul inhabits this body.
Right, yeah, like, yeah.
I am me. Or it's just what 2 Chainz says in that Nicki Minaj song, put it in your kidney.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's one of yeah. the two things. It's either about a deep and thorough dicking or it's about the soul.
Yeah. yeah. And I mean, basically, I generally, obviously, I think it's easy to make a case for this being sex. The main thing that would make it butt sex to me is no walls, only the bridge, my supper dish. Like,
that is really a strange line. No walls, only the bridge.
Yeah, I just think it's like trying to be like, almost like if you couldn't say the word, you're playing the game Taboo or something, mm-hmm. and you're like, like a bridge, but you're eating. but I am interested in the other possible interpretations too.
Yeah, me too. I really can't find a Lord of the Rings interpretation for this, and this I'm a bit stymied on this song, to tell you the truth. It's almost like Five Stair Steps, Age of Aquarius style approach in a song like
yeah,
this.
Yeah,
and when you hear them interviewed, they're like, music is a universal language. We just want to bring joy to the people and let them know that life is a gift and you should dance. Like, so obviously drugs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right, right.
I mean, that's there. Let's briefly say, well, two things. One, on the last episode, pretty much all three of us were sure that Lady Care was dead. And she's addressed it and said, like, I don't know how that started, that rumor that she had died from heroin. She did not die from heroin. I think she probably did a lot of drugs, and I wouldn't be shocked at all. There's no record of her. You know, I think she was, and I've watched some interviews with her, and she is pretty far out there. Like, I'm sure she's done pretty much everything.
I mean, they just seem so cool, though.
Well, they definitely seem cool, and they nailed it way early with the, like, multi-ethnic super group. You know, you got a Ukrainian, a Tokyo resident, and a Jersey girl, or a Pennsylvania go-go dancer. Took it to the top of the pops, you know, like,
yeah.
Sort of like, that's their diversity was their strength, and it was also part of their message, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, she's not dead. She's fine, and she's a Bernie bro. And also, Lady Kier has become, I mean, she was at the time, but she is a LGBTQ icon and political activist.
Okay. Not surprising.
Not surprising. You know, the disco vibes, fashion icon, LGBTQ icon, even though it seems as from all accounts that she's just a straight girl. All that is a decent just indicator that you should look at butt sex pretty thoroughly.
Right.
It's not quite proof. And then in here, with Q-Tip's verse in here, he's talking about, you know, getting high, making music, and having sex, and like soul bonding with someone, kind of. But then he says, you'll see the funky side of me. Okay. All right. Makes sense.
Yeah.
The funky side. But then he says, baby, you'll see that rhythm is the key. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I can't think of a reason why rhythm with butt sex, you know what I mean? Like why that would point to butt sex and not just sex. You know?
Oh, no. I mean, I think that is not that particular line. But I also think that definitely doesn't disqualify butt sex.
Right. Well, these lyrics do seem like, and especially after listening to or watching interviews with her and Dimitri, these lyrics really do seem like they're by Lady Kier. And that's what she has said, is that these are her lyrics.
Yeah. But she's like, the depth of the hula groove.
Okay, sure.
Move us to the nth hoop. Then she's talking about an elephant.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm sympathetic to this argument. And I have the most information on it written down.
What do you have for heroin? Do you have anything for heroin?
Well, I mean, these folks, Dimitri and Lady Kier, like I said, were lovers at the time and collaborators. And she was super whipped on him. You can just see in the music video, when she goes like, I couldn't ask for another, it will immediately cut to him.
Oh, yeah.
Again and again, because she's talking about him, her boyfriend, her lover, and the quote-unquote leader of the band.
Yeah.
Because in all the interviews, he always talks about how he created D-Lo.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like, well, I think it's, let's just call it a three-way collaboration, man. Like,
yeah, seriously.
I mean, so you're saying, like, if it wasn't her, it'd be somebody else just as good? I don't think so.
Yeah.
She was pretty good. You know? In those sorts of situations where you see, like, an older New York City DJ bringing this super hot go-go dancer into a band and releasing stuff, it's like, he's probably also her dealer for whatever. You know what I mean?
Right. Oh, yeah.
Like, they are doing drugs. The question is, like, are they doing all the drugs or are they doing heroin?
Right.
Like, is sort of all this ecstasy and everything that she's talking about? I mean, it could be a combination of drugs and butt sex and, you know, it could be all of the above in a certain sense. I wouldn't be, like, I guess what I'm saying is there is, I would put the chances that this couple, so two-thirds of the band, Toate, not really...
taking care of, he's doing other stuff, yeah.
Doing other stuff. But I would put the odds that this couple slash two-thirds of the band are doing heroin and having butt sex regularly at above 90%.
Yeah, I think that's, yep, it's pretty high, I think.
But the only other option would be that they're having a lot of butt sex, but they're just not doing heroin. They're doing every other drug.
Right. Because they're definitely doing whatever kind of MDMA was around in 1990.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Which, it's just, it, I mean, honestly, to me, the reason I'm being thrown off is just because of how the song sounds, honestly. Like, it just doesn't have a heroin vibe to me enough. Where like, if you were like, this song's about speed or cocaine or... I'm
or more, mushrooms.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's so many other things that I feel like... LSD, like it seems more like that.
Rather than specifically heroin.
That's the thing,
yeah. Because other bands that write about heroin all the time, like the Velvet Underground, they're not going...
Yeah.
They're going like ding ding bang,
ding, yeah.
You know, or they're droning on. And so for this band to be doing heroin and writing songs about heroin, but they sound like this, just doesn't seem to make sense, yeah. Is what you're saying.
Now, in general, if you were like, if I had not heard the song and you said, well, actually the most fundamental part of it is a Herbie Hancock bass line from an Italian movie from the 60s, I'd be like, okay, that could seems be like heroin. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you're like, oh, and Bootsy Collins is in the video. Like, okay,
yeah.
We're getting there.
Yeah, you know? we're getting close. But then you're mentioning Jimi Hendrix, but also Q-Tip just has such an incredible marijuana vibe.
For sure.
Yeah.
And the look of the video and their whole stylizing stuff, it just does seem a lot more like Molly... weed,
yeah.
Mushrooms, LSD. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like it's a Molly song, really, more than anything else to me.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, if that's not really there, and Lord of the Rings, it's really, really tough to find how this song would be about Lord of the Rings.
I was trying to make it about Goldberry, Tom Bombadil's lady.
As you will.
Even I don't think I could... quite get it there.
Right. So it's now our task to figure out. I mean, we've done a little work on it, but I think we have a little tiny bit more to figure out how the fuck this song is about butt sex.
Yeah.
All along as you go into it, there's nothing disqualifying.
Right.
The chills that you spill up my back keep me filled with satisfaction. Fine.
So you're positionally consistent.
And it's the back. I couldn't ask for possibly another object in my butt or whatever.
One and done, or this is like, maybe like Q-Tip's invited to the party.
Sure. And no walls, only the bridge. It's sort of like people speak about, you hear the term like the vaginal wall,
right.
But you don't often hear the term like anal wall.
No. And you got the bridge too, so it's like I think this is a salad tossing anthem right here in this verse.
Okay, and then my second wish. Okay, it's just praising her lover.
Yeah.
Watch out. The depth of the hula groove move us to the nth hoop. Great. That again, not disqualifying at all.
Yeah.
We're going through to Horton here to who? God damn. I mean, that's a smallness, like it's going through a hoop to Horton. Here's a who.
Mm-hmm. Like I just discovered a whole new universe when you went in that far.
Okay, or like discovery, yeah. In general. Like,
yeah.
Oh right. Wow. Things up my butt are nice,
but I do think not vicious or malicious is almost like. I'm reclaiming this. A lot of people think of this as sort of like a violent thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was not vicious or malicious, just like claiming the butt here.
Right. But, and this is sort of the, the secret pleasure thing of butt sex that's often done in songs where it's like they don't say it. They just reference it and you're like, are you just talking about, you seem to be talking about more something extra, something.
Yeah, yeah, right, exactly.
Not like just like, you're like I slept with my boyfriend, so what?
Yeah.
Like but if, we're doing something secret.
If you were thinking about just a standard PNV action,
right,
you wouldn't be like, wait, was that malicious?
Right.
Did he try to punish you there? You'd be like, no, what are you talking about there?
Yeah, there is a feeling of like, well, I like it.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of thing going on here that there's a little bit of hiding the ball. And it's like, what is the ball? It might be butt sex.
Yeah.
It's something. It could be that like, oh, me and my boyfriend do very special exotical drugs and then have sex, and that's part of the attraction. There's something secretive going on.
Yeah.
Which I do think that there's a case that that's heroin, but
yeah,
that like, what, why is she so flipped on this guy? This is not let's hear it for the boy or something like that, where no. She's just like, he's nice, he's cool. Like, there's something magic. It's like when Hart talks about guys.
Yeah, yeah. He's doing something that that other guys have not been able to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's some revelation that the speaker here is going through in this new love. And it's not just like, never thought I would be this in love. It's just, it's not like someone came along that was right for me. It's like, I'm really experiencing massive amounts of ecstasy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. Which again points to heroin and butt sex sort of equally.
Mm-hmm.
But as we've said, it just seems like they're doing tons of drugs. All kind of, the same thing that we had with Sweating Bullets. It's like, it's every drug. And it says later on, it says, get ready with it. Can't quit it. Get ready with it. That's just, there's a little more preparation, you know, with anal sex.
Yeah, yeah, right. I mean, I think it's almost undoubtedly a sex song.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of lyrics out there that are really like personal inside lyrics that they're intentionally opaque.
Yeah.
Like that the audience is never going to be able to figure out what they're about because they're using private jokes. They're using terms that they and one other person know. When you add music to poetry, you no longer have to have your poetry be explicable.
Yeah, yeah. It just doesn't have to work as hard either. Yeah.
Yeah, because you have a tune and people like to dance to it. Boom. Yeah, who cares what it says? Yeah. I mean, that's the way a lot of the, you know, like the whatever the A&R people or whatever, they're like, I don't care what it fucking says.
Mm-hmm.
If it works, it works.
Right, yeah.
They're not like, maybe it should be like grooves in the head.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Like, oh, you guys are done? You're out of the studio? Great. We can sell this one.
Yeah. They don't, you don't get like notes from the studio about maybe you should change this line of the song unless it's explicit or something like
right,
that.
Right, right, right.
Exactly. And so you're not explicit and you just, all the references that you include are references that are, that can't be decoded. And then you get the satisfaction of being up there on stage and saying this thing out loud, and everybody's like, yeah. And you're like, I'm talking about getting ass fucked. You know.
Bam, 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 bam.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of the fun of being a wild and woolly musician like that.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw how much Hendrix buried his butt sex and heroin references in.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
In that episode. I mean, these guys are at least aspiring to be as far out as Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah.
You know, Jimi Hendrix is dead already, but they have Bootsy in it, you know.
Yeah.
He opens it and closes it, and at the very end of the song, he says, y'all, what does he say? The line is, y'all are crazy, man. That's what Bootsy Collins says to them.
Right.
So this is Bootsy motherfucking Collins in the studio with these people being like, y'all are crazy. Which, I mean, I'm sure Bootsy Collins has had anal sex and done heroin.
He's seen some things.
But these people are freaky to him.
Yeah.
Lady Kiera, Dimitri, and Toate over there just being nice, probably the only normal person in the vicinity. So I think Bootsy is probably Wouldn't be surprised if they did heroin in the studio, but would be surprised if they started butt fucking in the studio.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
Butsu would be like, wow, you guys really get down around here. You want me to what? Okay. Hold on. The mic's still on.
Wait, you need to clearly ask for another.
Another.
We believe in consent in D-Light.
Right.
Clear and affirmative consent.
No, I couldn't ask for another. Well, I think the nature of their relationship would be that she can't ask for anything. Dimitri only gives her things.
Yeah, that's...
Like, I have to say, like, watching the videos, the interview videos of the pair of them,
uh-huh.
She is on a tight leash. And DJ Super Dimitri, or whatever his name is, he seems very nice, but...
He's a little controlling.
Yeah, when you meet a couple and you're like, wow, this girl is on her best behavior for some reason. Why is she being so perfect?
Yeah.
And the guy's just like, I don't know, man. I'll just do whatever I want. And you're like, okay. Are you okay?
Yeah. Just blink twice if you...
I'll come with you. Oh, you're going to go into the bathroom? I'll come with you. Okay. Do you need help?
Is everything okay?
Yeah. I get a little bit of that vibe. I'm not, you know... there's no accusations here or anything like that, but I just get the vibe of that's like, I think they're doing some wild stuff.
Yeah.
And it's not like Lady Kier going like, I have an idea. What if we bone three guys tonight? It's like, she's not asking for anything. She's more like being told like, hey, Craig and Jamal are coming over. And, let's have a good time, okay?
Yeah.
Oh,
sounds like you like being in this band.
Yeah. Right. Which leads that vibe that I get that definitely pushes me toward thinking like, oh, that there could be a world where DJ Dimitri is like, why don't you write a song about how much you like getting fucked in the ass?
Yeah.
And she's like, okay, that's a great idea. Oh my god, you're a genius.
He's like, yeah, I'll find some samples.
I'll go find some samples. Okay. You just work on the lyrics, okay?
Yeah.
And do your exercises.
Keep dancing, baby.
Well, she started a thing called Vote Baby Vote. Which is sort of maybe her reclaiming this way she's called baby constantly by the rest of the band.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even Q-Tip comes in there and says, baby, just sing about the groove. Like, baby, just do what I'm about to say. And then she does, you know. And it seems, you know, it's like she doesn't wear a choker often, but, you know, she's definitely like a choker type girl, you know, or whatever, where she's like, yeah, I like my mean boyfriend. I am
he's
bad.
He's really talented.
He's so talented.
The thing is, he's in a band.
He's in a band, and I do misbehave sometimes.
Yeah, just
you know. You know, I mean, why is she, you know, it's like other bands don't write songs where they defend other members of the band.
Right.
So
right.
In this one, she does say, I don't know who DJ Soul is,
yeah.
But she says, DJ Soul was on a roll. I've been told he can't be sold. He's not vicious or malicious, just lovely and delicious. I wasn't... Why are you defending this person?
This new character arrives.
Yeah, I wasn't saying anything bad about DJ Soul. Who said that he was vicious and malicious?
Yeah,
who said that? Nobody said that.
Yeah, you're protesting a little too much there.
I mean, it sounds to me like maybe DJ Soul is vicious.
Yeah.
And malicious.
I just realized one reason this is not a good reason, but I did have a friend once who would, when he got to the chorus, would sing Lube is in the Fart.
Okay, I think that's case closed.
Yeah,
on
there
that
you
one.
Go. So
we got
great job, Brad.
I think we are saying that Groove is in the Heart by D-Light is about butt sex here on this episode. Okay, Sabotage by the Beastie Boys. I'm going to throw...
Okay, here, I'm just gonna keep writing them down.
Yeah,
right here.
Write it down that way. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Sabotage by the Beastie Boys. Okay. This week, Sean is going to pick our next two songs. Oh. Since I'm building the playlist, Sean gets... It's like
I love it.
I slice the cake, you get to pick which piece.
Yeah.
Let's see. Gloria by Laura Branigan.
Oh, okay.
Hold On by En Vogue.
Ooh, okay.
The Killing Moon by Echo and the Bunnymen.
Okay.
What's Up by Four Non Blondes.
Okay. That would be a crowd favorite, I think.
Probably. Enola Gay by Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark.
Oh, wow.
You know, da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. Which is about Nagasaki.
Oh, that's right.
Hiroshima. Yeah. Let's see. Killing in the Name of by Rage Against the Machine.
Okay.
By Crash Test Dummies.
Okay. Okay.
We just did heavy metal, so I won't do that. Never Too Much by Luther Vandross.
Okay. If we want to do a killing one, I would be into Killing in the Name of and the killing
Moon.
What do you think of those two options? I think we should do Killing Moon no matter what.
Let's do Killing Moon by Echo and the Bunnymen.
Uh-huh.
Great song. Very, you know, esoteric or, you know, evocative lyrics.
Yeah.
It's kind of dodgy what it's saying or what it's about, right?
Uh-huh.
And you said Killing in the Name of or...
Crash Test Dummies.
Let's do a Killing in the Name of. And do a killing, awesome. Killing.
Great.
Is this good? We have a... Okay, so we're going to do Echo and the Bunnymen, and we're going to do Rage Against the Machine next week.
Hell yeah.
On this show. And we'll be back with a guest, but we know you guys like these solo episodes too, so we'll keep doing those from time to time.
Yeah.
All right, well, write in with your theories on those upcoming songs. If you want to disagree with us, please leave us a voicemail. And I'm serious. By the way, everyone, I wanted to say that I think we came down pretty hard on the one argument that was
submitted by voicemail.
That was submitted by voicemail. I think we were pretty brutal on it. So, you know, and I hope that doesn't scare anyone from, you know, writing in, because again, most theories get shot down here.
Yeah,
you know,
shoot down each other's a lot of the time.
So. Yeah, constantly. So there's that. And I know you're not here to defend yourself. If you want to write in and say that and then leave your phone number, we call you live or some shit like that. It's fine. We could do that. But also, you know, it's fun to interact, and especially if you've really got something that you think is accurate. Anyhow, thank you so much for joining us again on Heroin, Butt Sex, and Lord of the Rings. We will see you again very soon. Thanks for being awesome, Sean.
Oh, thank you for being great, Richard.
All right, thanks, guys. Have a good week. We'll see you soon.